our sins. You've heard from Mr. Jordan with regard to some of the debate related to the education of students of African descent in the U.S. If I were to summarize his remarks, I would say that he talked about the fact that year after year, decade after decade, our children receive the same experiences in public schools across this country. None of the reform efforts have really helped us thus far. Professor and Attorney Overture put the situation out there in terms of making the data alive, and he gave us a brief historical sketch looking back at the Brown decision and its relevance for us here in the U.S. at this particular point in time, 50 years later. Now we'll move to other members of the panel who will share with us some of the solutions that they've been involved in, some thoughts with regard to the first two presentations, and we'll start with Senator, Louisiana Senator and practicing attorney, Charles Jones.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. I'm accustomed to being in Baptist churches, and I talk to them, I have to talk back to them. This is indeed a singular, distinguished pleasure and opportunity for me to participate on this outstanding panel this afternoon on this very, very important issue. And I'd like to thank Dr. Baskerville and Mafio and for all of the historical black colleges and universities of the nation, the president, chancellors, and all of you for engaging this very significant subject matter. This is my 25th year in the state Senate. I was elected to the state house in 1979. I came there after having served almost 4 years as a prosecutor, as an assistant district attorney. It was during that four-year stint that I came to realize that we had to do something about saving our children. And so, after I left the DA's office and went to the legislature in the State House of Louisiana, my president of the university, Dr. Spice, is here today, I wanted to make sure that we did something to deal with an alternative to incarceration for our children. And so I passed a bill to provide alternatives to incarceration for juveniles, created what we call the Marvis House, the new house. And as a result of that, between that time and now, we have saved over 4,000 children who otherwise would have gone to the criminal justice system as an alternative to incarceration. After that, I went to the Senate. I'd like to say that since we're talking about criminal justice here, I'd like to say that I was paroled to the Senate. After going to the Senate and serving for a while in 1991, I was then chairman of the Legislative Black Caucus in Louisiana. There were 32 African-American legislators at the time. And we had a meeting at Southern University, and that was the beginning of our program, Save Our Sons. At that program, we had over 1,000 African-American young men and boys between the ages 6 and 18. But before I go any further with respect to that, I'd like to also point out, as Dr. Overture has talked about, the preservation and protection of our historical black colleges and universities. Until 1980, I served as an attorney for Southern University System and in the matter of the United States Coast State of Louisiana. I see Dr. Johnson is here from former President Graham. 25 years ago, we negotiated a consent decree that resulted in Solomon Graham receiving over $200 million as a result of that consent decree settlement. So the survival of historical black colleges, preservation, protection, and enhancement of historical black colleges is at the center of saving our sons. While I was in the Senate of 1991, we had the conference of seven. The next year we had one ground. We had over 2,000 young people, young black men and girls, to attend that conference. So the last 14 years we have been engaged in the struggle to save our sons and daughters. Then in the year 2001, while I was in my law office preparing to try a reapportionment case, I was looking out over the Washita River, thinking about the plight of our people and the future of our children. Thinking about the prison system, Louisiana having the highest per capita percentage of people in prison. In 1980, when I went to the legislature, I said that there was a direct connection between unemployment, economic deprivation, lack of education, and incarceration. So I'm standing there thinking about what we need to do to protect and defend and to save our children. I said, well, Lord, you need to do something about the number of black people, black men in prison across this country and in our state. Still, the Lord spoke back to me and said, Charles, I put you in the state senate. You do something. And so I introduced a bill to repeal the mandatory minimum sentences for nonviolent crimes. We have been introducing this resolution at the National Black Caucus of State Legislators, where I chaired the Law and Justice Committee for some 10 years. When I introduced this bill, we had a conservative governor who was Republican at the time, and there were people who locked themselves into the failure because they thought the bill didn't have a chance to pass, to repeal the mandatory minimum sentences for nonviolent crimes. That bill passed.
Yes.
But that bill didn't pass because the legislators in my state thought it was the most humane, altruistic, and Christian thing to do. It passed because it reduced the state's Department of Corrections budget from $700 million to $500 million in 1 year. If we want to save our sons, we have to revamp and revise the criminal justice system across the United States. I was pleased to see that on January 12th, the United States Supreme Court found the federal sentencing guidelines to be unconstitutional. For 8 years, I have been arguing in every federal court that I appeared in that the federal sentencing guidelines were unconstitutional. And so on January 12th, in Booker and Fanfan decision, the Supreme Court said, yes, the federal sentencing guidelines are unconstitutional. As a result of that, because it affected relevant conduct in those cases dealing with weapons, we now can go back in the federal court, file a 2255 or federal motion, and ask the judge to reconsider the sentencing. If it works and works well, and it should, literally, thousands and thousands of our people should be let out of these federal prisons. One of the things that we have to do as we talk about saving our sons is to do just that. In every state, we must pass bills to repeal mandatory minimum sentences for nonviolent crimes. We must make sure that we repeal mandatory minimum sentences in the federal system. And if we do that, we'll open up these prison doors. Now, why am I talking about that? I'm talking about that because Dr. Jeremiah Wright was speaking at Morehouse College, and he started off by saying that he gave the story about Paul's letter to the Church of Corinth. And after Paul had used homiletic heights heretofore unimagined, after he had waxed eloquently, he ended with this powerful and poetic pact plea. Do not forget my chains. As we talk about saving our sons, we must not forget the chains. We must not forget that as we come to this summit and to this conference, that there are millions, I told you, she said there are millions of us in prison right now. There's no issue more important. There's nothing more pressing and for us to engage this issue and do something about it. In fact, I'm convinced that the criminal justice system in America is the closest thing to slavery that we can possibly imagine. Our question, the question to us is simply this.